This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
And now we'll be focusing on a conversation relating to the legal aspects when it comes to child maintenance and what is in the interest of the child. So what are those things that are being taken into consideration by a magistrate or presiding officer or mediation officer when it comes to child maintenance? So all of those aspects that are being taken into consideration. So we'll be in conversation with Lungisa Mabute, who's a social worker. We'll also have Josephine Pitt, who is a family advocate, as we have this conversation around child maintenance. Have you ever been to the child maintenance court or child maintenance court? What was that experience like? 061-987-000. You can also tweet at Aldrin Simpier, hashtag PowerTalk, and also you can tweet at PowerFM987. And even post the court order, if indeed there is a court order in place, has it been difficult to make sure that the party who has been told to pay the maintenance, which in the majority happens to be the male, right? Has that person been keeping up with payment? And have you struggled to enforce the court order itself? What steps did you follow to ensure that the maintenance is paid? And when there were defaults, what is it that you did? And here's the other question though. So if there's a court order that says that per month you have to pay, let's say, 15,000 rand, like in the case of former President Jacob Zuma, the maintenance claim that has been made by his wife Thobeka Madiba Zuma, of is it 14 or 15? 15,000, yeah. So in that particular case, when you find that the person who's supposed to pay the maintenance says that I can't afford anymore, so I'll give you, let's say, 7,000. When eventually the person is able to pay the 15,000 again, do you backdate that payment, the maintenance payment, and can you claim a backdated on that? Because there is a court order in place. So 061-987-000. You can also tweet at Aldrin Simpier, hashtag PowerTalk. And also you can tweet at PowerFM987. Josephine, good morning and welcome to PowerTalk.
Hi, Aldrin. Thank you very much for having me. And a very good morning as well to the listeners of PowerFM.
Thank you so much for making time for us. So I have a couple of questions. We're just waiting for Lungisa Mabude to be on the line to join us. And Lungisa Mabude is a social worker. So number one, Josephine, how should we understand child maintenance and the purpose that it serves?
Okay, firstly, child maintenance is an obligation by the, number one, the caregivers of the children, the biological parents of the children, and any other person who is legally obliged to provide the living essential to a child. Because remember, children are minors, so as a result, they, you know, it is highly likely that they will not be able to provide living essentials for themselves. However, we also need to identify the living essentials that we are talking about here. Number one, we have a responsibility as the parents or the caregivers to provide housing for them or accommodation for them. Number two, we have to ensure that they get schooled, you know, to provide for their educational needs as well. Mm-hmm. Number three, we have to provide for their clothing, take care of their medical needs or medical necessities, so on and so on. So that is what that legal obligation is all about. But what I've also picked up out there in terms of the complaints that I normally handle is that maintenance is highly commercialized in the sense that people look at maintenance as just money, but then they forget another important element of remaining a parent to the child. Because remember, once you start saying pay 500 grand, then you are turning the other parents into a sort of an ATM parent or a parent that subscribes to the pay-as-you-go. Because people think that just by throwing the money, then it means everything, every necessity of the child has now been taken care of. But that should not be viewed as such. I always go out and promote that parents, let us put in an element of parenting into the maintenance. Yes, let us provide money, because most of the things need to be paid for. You know, we need to actually service them. We need to pay school fees, we need to pay the bonds, the rent, the electricity, et cetera, and et cetera. But however, you know, personalized it such that the child will also be emotionally and psychologically secured and protected by yourself within this particular scheme of maintenance.
Okay, so you raised another important point, an ATM parent, but we'll get back to that. So when it comes to the clothing and it comes to the schooling, for instance, those two, where you find that one of the parents, for instance, once says that they're claiming for about 15,000 on the basis that they believe that the child should be going to a certain private school, but that private school is quite expensive. As the parent on the other side, who the claim is being made against, is there any recourse that you have?
Yes. You do have, because what I've also picked up is that in terms of the law, if you are a parent that would say, I am not able to afford this particular amount of money, then you will then need to then speak to the court about that, because people think that whenever the court actually calls them to come in, they think, you know, I am already in trouble. But when the court calls you, they're basically saying, we are going to actually create an environment that is conducive to both of you parents, where you can sit down and have a conversation about the needs of the child. So if a parent feels that, you know, that the child needs to go to a particular private school, you know, well and good for that, because we want a good future for the child. Mm-hmm. But when the other parent is not able to actually afford that, then they need to provide proof in the form of the financial circumstances.
Yeah.
And I want to actually give a message to the parents out there, because we know that some parents have the tendency of hiding assets. Some will actually just present their payslip and the banking statement and then hide the fact that they are also having other sources of income. But however, we have improved our services to an extent that we have a system that is able to do what we call follow the rent sort of a system or process, wherein we will be able to track you and your trend expenditures as to how you are able to afford certain things, but you are only having a payslip showing 20,000 rand.
Yeah.
So parents, please, you're going to get yourself into trouble when you just come to court and then you're hiding expenses. We'll get maintenance investigators onto you.
Okay. Josephine, man, you raises in Disney. Okay. So the question about not being able to pay, for me, becomes another difficult one, because there is being able to pay, that I can afford it. But ordinarily, I wouldn't have wanted my child to go to such an expensive school, because that probably goes against my moral gut. Is that an argument that I can put forward?
That, you know, that kind of an argument is going to fall flat. And I'll tell you why. If you look at Section 28, Subsection 2 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, it speaks of the best interest of children being of paramount importance in every matter concerning the child, meaning that those rights are so supreme such that they can override anything before it. So if the mother says, we have looked at the altitude of the child, you know, the child is performing in this way. The child is, let's say, for instance, the child plays hockey and, you know, that prima and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And in order for them to be able to be, you know, to come up and be a responsible citizen, for them to be whole, they will need to be placed in a particular school. And as a parent, you need to come to the party.
Mm-hmm.
But then other parents are thinking that, oh, when Josephine is saying this, is because of she's a slave queen. Josephine, you know, just wants to be seen by the next door neighbors and all that. Then we'll present the report of the child before the maintenance officer. We'll present the progress of the child and the report from the school to actually prove that, you know, it is indeed in the best interest of this child to get this kind of education.
But if the child is failing, then what happens?
You know, if the child is failing, then as a parent, we also need to still come to the party.
Yeah.
You know, the child could be failing because of other issues, such as, for instance, the psychosociological issues that are happening.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, at the top of children's challenges, there's always issues with the parenting.
Mm-hmm.
I always say, if you look at the upbringing of the child, things go very, very wrong at the upbringing together. Most of them tend to want to use the child as the weapon to hurt each other. But then they forget that they're actually not hating each other per se. They are also destroying this particular child that is going to start having some withdrawal symptoms.
Yeah.
The child is going to sit back and then start blaming themselves and think that my mommy is not happy simply because I am alive. You know, those are the things. And then coupled with that, the child may also be subjected to bullying at the school. So if the child is not doing well in terms of school work, parents need to be supportive of the child and need to also explore other avenues where they can assist the child. Don't withhold the money and say the child is failing.
Yeah.
Rather have that investigated by the social workers or the children's therapist.
Okay. Lungisa Mabude, who is a social worker in private practice, is also joining us for this conversation. Lungisa, good morning and welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning, Adrian, and good morning to the listeners.
Thank you so much for making time for us. And just picking up from what
You're
Josephine
welcome.
has highlighted now, and that being the child being destroyed in the process, or the childhood of the child being affected because of the tension that's there between the two parents. What is it that the parents should be taking into consideration when we say the interest of the child? What is in the best interest of the child?
Adrian, I completely agree with what the guest is saying. When parents are now fighting or they disagree, they forget that the most important person in all of this is the child, and they use that child to sort of resolve their arguments. And yet the child has got nothing to do with all of this. The child as young as 5 can actually make decisions and can see what is happening. So it is imperative for parents to not think about themselves, but to think about the child. Why? Because at the end of the day, you do not want to raise a child that is now, that you've destroyed, or that is destroyed and you've actually contributed towards that.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to be at all times be very mindful of the fact that yes, you've got all these disagreements as a couple or as
do you have to explain it to them?
You mean the children?
Yeah.
When you can also sit down with the children and make them aware that mommy and daddy will not be staying together anymore, and it's not your fault. You need to make sure that they understand that it's not their fault, because at the end of the day, they think that they've contributed to it, or the reason you've moved out, or the reason you as parents are fighting, it's because of them.
Mm.
And then it will take them to that point of them having withdrawal symptoms, and eventually at school they're not doing well. And I heard you asking a question earlier on in terms of if the child is not doing well at school, do I still pay? It is your duty to maintain the child. Whether the child is doing well or is not doing well, with all due respect, you need to investigate why the child is not doing well and not say, no, I'm going to withdraw my money because the child is not doing well.
Mm-hmm.
The child is yours.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you need to make sure that you support that child through and through.
Yeah. So the point that Josephine raised earlier on as well, and speaking about some parents having the tendency to hide assets. And I'm thinking now that as the parent who is the claimant in the case, you probably will be angry. You know, you would be infuriated because of the conduct of the other parent. And sometimes this may just play out in front of the child.
Yes, it might play out in front of the child, but you need to contain yourself at all times.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, you do not want to destroy that child. In fact, the child shouldn't see what is happening between his or her parents.
Yeah.
And they do see what's at the end of the day. But it is also important for you as a couple to sit down with the children and explain some of the things. If, for instance, it happens and then the child was there, you need to go back and sit down with the child and make them understand that, look, mommy and daddy, they were not agreeing on certain things there.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes mommy and daddy, we argue, but we're trying to resolve issues. We're not just arguing. It's just that we're trying to resolve issues.
Yeah.
So it's got nothing to do with you.
Okay. So we're taking your calls on 0861-987-000, your tweet at Alderan St. Pierre, hashtag Power Talk, and also you can tweet at PowerFM987. We're in conversation with Josephine Peter, who is a senior legal admin officer at Chief Family, also at the Office of the Chief Family Advocate. And we also have Lungisa Mabude, who is a social worker in the private practice. Calvin, good morning.
Good morning, Adrian. How are you?
Good, good, Calvin.
Yeah, no, I just want to argue with both the people that are there in the studio. Number one, our courts do not have the capacity to solve the problems of our children properly. The procedure is well written. Even when you enter the children's court, you find that they write everything is done in the interest of the child. But here's the problem that I have, because I was in court and I struggled. Firstly, the interest of the child is given to the person who stays with the child. The capacity I'm talking about, they do not have the capacity to investigate whether the child is staying better or is it the choice of the child to stay with the parent. Like they said rightly, that another parent can be using the child to hate the partner. So in my case, I was as a family advocate. I went to another court in Northwest, and everything was in favor of my other partner, even if she had no capacity to look after the child. In fact, she took the child to a relative. You know, when I came to court to say, they would tell me we are going to send the social workers to go and check where the child lived. They never did that. I had to fight tooth and nail up until the child was given to me. And the child cried in court. But I'm just saying this thing to say that the problem why we are serving our children is because we have every procedure written nicely. But when you are in court, it depends which magistrate is dealing with your case.
Okay. Justin, your take on that?
Yes. You know, I respect Kevin's view on the capacity of the court to actually uphold the best interest of the children. However, I wanted to mention the following. We should also remember that there are processes in place, and the courts are the last, for me, they are the last man standing insofar as parenting is concerned. I always love to caution parents against abdicating their responsibilities to the courts. First and foremost, the courts are not the ones that are raising the children, but the children are being raised by the parents who actually gave birth to them. Then the parents then need to be mature enough to basically set aside their own quarrels and understand that though the romantic relationship is over, mm-hmm. the parenting relationship is a lifetime relationship. Mm. When you decide to have a child, it is a lifetime relationship, whether you want to hate the other parent or not. Remember that there are certain milestones that you are going to be celebrating with regard to this child with the other parent. The parents, the child is going to get married, they will graduate at school, and you will always be there together. Things are going to happen in both families, and you will still need to hold each other's arm. And I heard Kevin saying that he had to fight tooth and nail. Insofar as children are concerned, let us step back from even using the word fight.
Mm.
Do not fight, because the minute you bring in that element of fighting, believe you me, the impact that it has on the child is that the child will eventually and ultimately recover from their childhood, because all that they'll be knowing in terms of their default settings will be that we resolve issues by just fighting.
Okay.
Why can't parents then understand that the courts are not the parenting? They are only just there to actually assist in terms of enforcing each other's rights in terms of the applicable law.
Okay. Christopher, good morning.
Morning, Aldrin. How are you?
Good, good, Christopher.
Aldrin, you know, I've got a problem. I was taken to court by two of my mother's kids. Believe you me, the magistrate, when I entered both courts, they told me the way in which I'm stupid, the way in which I wear expensive clothes, wear expensive perfumes, drive expensive cars, and I don't maintain my kids. Before they could even speak to me, the first time I went there, you know, they were so shocked, because I told them, they said, no, they will mediate, they will get a mediator, or else we go to trial. I forced them that, no, let's go to trial. From there, when we went to trial, they were so shocked because I took out the receipts of bank deposit slip that I deposited to the mothers, and the teachers knows me, the teachers of both kids, and I never spoke bad about the mothers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my 10-year-old tried when I told him what his mother has done, taking me to court. I had pictures of holidays. I took my kids to the Kruger National Park, Eastern Cape, wherever you can think of. I had pictures.
Mm.
And the mother told the court of my assets. And I told the court that I don't work. Indeed, I don't work. I'm self-employed.
Mm.
But believe you me, each and every 10 rand that I get, I share with my kids. And my 10-year-old told me, Papa, you know, when I pick him up in the morning to take him to school, sometimes I'll bring a big box of Roman's pizza.
Mm.
In the morning, around 6, I bought it the previous night. Then my boy told me, Papa, you must never bring anything here because you know what my mom and my sisters does. They just enjoy your food. They never say thank you. You always bring us a lot of things, groceries, but they never say thank you. So the courts, unfortunately, they always side with the mothers.
Mm-hmm.
They never. That's why they were shocked when I took up the receipts and photos of holidays that I take my kids to.
Yeah, so Lungisa, this is something that comes out a lot, where especially this is from the father's side, where they feel that there is a misrepresentation that constantly happens, and they feel that the presiding officer tends to side more with the mother.
You're quite right, Aljan, but once again, the reason probably the presiding officer will be siding with the mother, which shouldn't be happening. It's because the child is with the mother, and maybe the mother already has painted the father in a very bad way. But the issue should be a proper investigation of what exactly is it's the current situation. Like Christopher is indicating that he is fully involved in his children's lives.
Yeah.
So. For me, that should have been a situation where they would have asked for a social workers report to be done probably before coming to court.
Mm-hmm.
So that when he comes to court, the social worker can actually present the report in terms of... And the social worker, when she's compiling that report, will need to get the information from both the mother and the father.
Mm-hmm.
And the father will have to present the receipt. And I mean, I commend him for keeping the receipt.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing that that's what he's got in terms of, this is what I'm doing for my children.
Okay. So we continue to take your calls just after Power News headlines. It is 11:30. Your tweets as well at Aldrin St. Pierre. Use the hashtag PowerTalk. And also you can tweet at PowerFM987.
Speak up. Call the Power Line on 0861-987-000.
And you can also tweet at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag PowerTalk, and also tweet at PowerFM987. If you've just joined us, the conversation we're having is understanding the legal aspects of child maintenance and what is meant by the best interest of the child when it comes to maintenance. We're in conversation this afternoon or this morning with Josephine Peter, who is a senior legal admin officer at the Office of the Chief Family Advocate. We also have Lungisa Mapude, who is a social worker and private practice. So any questions and comments that you have or clarity that you may need, 0861-987-000. Your tweets at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag PowerTalk, and also you can tweet at PowerFM987. Josephine, before we go back to the power line, when it comes to determining the amount of maintenance that should be paid monthly, what is taken into consideration?
What has been taken into consideration is the needs of the child versus the means of both the parents. And we also need to factor in the issue that are normally highlight as the developmental needs and the stage of the child. Because remember, Josephine's child cannot be, you know, in the same position as Adrian's child next door.
Mm-hmm.
So we look at also the lifestyle that the child has been accustomed to. For example, a child that lives in Camp Bay, you know, you may find that they're attending a cruise where they're paying 40,000 per month.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also residing, you know, in a particular accommodation which is also X amount per month. So we take into consideration the lifestyle of the child and the needs of the child versus the means of both the parents. And parents must also understand that when we talk about the needs of the children, you cannot, as a person, when you are aiming 10,000 rand and come and claim before the court that, you know, your child's maintenance is worth 25,000 rand. You know, then that is not going to actually help your case, because firstly, the question would be then how is it that you then came up to that 25,000 rand? That is why each and every maintenance case starts with an inquiry, mm-hmm. where the maintenance officer sits both parents down before they can actually even disclose their financial means and the proof. They actually have to first start with the needs of mm-hmm. the child. Then we then determine in terms of the means of the of both the parents.
So the means of both parents would mean that we look at what income both parents have, right?
As well as you minus their current expenditures, because remember we need exactly the actual income that they have after they've spent on the expenses.
Okay, and then Lungisa, there's another point that has been raised, especially by what's it called again? I forgot the name of this organization, but it is an organization that looks into poverty, and they did a report where they looked into unpaid work. So unpaid domestic work. So you'll be taking care of the child. And let's say the mother is with the child, and there is, of course, domestic work that goes into taking care of this child. Is that being taken into consideration when you speak about the maintenance?
It would be taken into consideration, because remember, those are all the expenses that goes into taking care of the child.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Oxfam, sorry.
If there is, if you as a mother, you've got a domestic worker that is helping you, mm-hmm. and you're staying with the child, surely the child benefits from what mm-hmm. the domestic worker is doing.
But from you as the mother, because you are also doing work, which they call unpaid care work, is that taken into consideration?
If you're not earning an income.
Let's say even if you are earning an income, but you are living with the child, so you're taking care of the child, so the child is always around you. So there is unpaid care work that is happening.
In other words, the money that will have to come to you because you're looking after the child.
Yes. Is it there? Is it something that is factored in?
I'm actually hearing that in terms of now paying the mother.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure about it. Maybe Josephine can.
Okay, Josephine. Hi, Josephine.
Hi. Okay. Yes. What I've picked up out there that is currently happening is that, for instance, the mother as the caregiver would be the one shouting, "Eat your vegetables." You know?
Yeah.
And
yes. Yes.
But when you go to the court, that is never even factored in. At the court, we actually look at the financial aspect of things. But the truth is, and you know, a lot of my friends have been laughing at me lately when I was telling them that many caregivers actually shoot themselves in the foot, because they put the financial aspect at the top of everything, but they forget that there are other logistics that are involved mm-hmm. in the house. For instance, during lockdown, and especially during the June and the December holidays, I see many fingerprints on my fridge. And a child that would ordinarily maybe eat once a day, because of, you know, they wake up, they have their breakfast, and then quickly go to school, and then come back and then eat lunch before the supper. They'll eat seven times a day. So if you go to court and then say to court, you want 5,000 rand, it gets exhausted before the middle of the month.
Mm-hmm.
So and coupled with that, then that's when the parents then who are taking care of the children start also developing stress, because you know they can
yes.
see that they're not coping mm-hmm. simply because of those other logistical issues that are involved in the house. You know, you find you shouting that they can't do their homework, mm-hmm. not mm-hmm. to arrive late at home and mm-hmm. all that. And then
instilling discipline also takes strain. Eh?
Exactly. But nobody actually recognizes that, and I've seen that other parents then tend to get involved in what I call a parallel parenting, and which, you know, which doesn't help. You find that when daddy, I'll just say that for example, you know, I'm not trying to even offend me. Daddy will be picking up the children over the weekend, and when the children go to his house, they watch TV up until 2 a.m. They eat ice cream even in winter, but when it goes to mommy's house, it doesn't happen. Then that's when you pick up that the children then start rebelling, you know, against mom, because mom is not fun and daddy's is fun. So mm-hmm. caregivers are actually going through a lot, but that is never taken into consideration when we go to court. We only just look at the financial aspect of things, and I think that needs to change. You know, we need to start, you know, having some form of a reward in terms of, you know, parents coming together and you know, not being counterproductive in parenting the child.
Thank you so much for that. Lebohang, good morning.
Yes, Mr. Eldren, how are you?
Good, man.
Yes, Mr. Eldren, I've got a problem with the same issue of caller number one. The thing is, I'm maintaining a child. First of all, before I maintain the child, I was...
Okay, Lebohang, there's a lot of noise there in the background. If you can find a bit of a quieter place, please, please. Okay, in the meantime, I'm going to go to Lerato and then I'll come back to you. Lerato, good morning.
Good morning, Eldren. I wanted to, I don't know, ask the question. Yeah, the thing is, with me, I didn't go through the court for maintenance. We had an agreement when we separated, me and my ex. His only responsibility was to take care of the school fees and scholar transport and whatnot. So recently, he bought a car and he stopped contributing. He didn't even say anything. Whenever I'd ask about it, and he'd be like, no, I'll pay. And only to find out even the school fees, he isn't paying. When I asked, he's like, no, now my financial responsibilities went up. I won't be able to afford to take care of the child. So I'm wondering, in this instance, what is it that I do? I didn't want to go through the court because of the experiences that my friends have had. Like, it's a long process. And at the end of the day, you find the court being in favor of the other parent who is not fully involved in the child's upbringing. You know?
Okay. Josephine?
Yeah.
You know what,
just hold on, Lerato. Let's get Josephine to respond to you if you have any follow-up question as well. Josephine?
All right.
You know, I always promote court orders. I always say to people not to only just, you know, rely on the verbal agreement. And I'll tell you why. I am futuristic in nature in the sense that imagine something happens tomorrow to that other parent that is contributing to the maintenance. If they die tomorrow, then where do you then go? You're going to be experiencing so many challenges when you have to go to the Master of the High Court, go to the court and everywhere, you know, to just go and get what we call future maintenance. So it is extremely important not to only, you know, to judge your situation with the experience of the other people.
Yeah.
People can come to you and tell you that the court processes are tedious, but that is their personal experience. You know, go and experience yourself by going to the nearest court where you are staying or where you are working, because now the Maintenance Act has been amended to an extent that you don't have to only go where you are residing with the child, but you can go anywhere at your convenience.
Yeah.
Take with yourself the birth certificate of the child, your ID, as well as a statement, a mini statement of your income and expenditure and the needs of the children, and you will definitely get assistance.
Okay, Lerato, sorted?
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you so much for that. And Josephine, the other thing is that what I find as well is there seems to be shame attached to parents who go to court to get a court order in place. Someone tweeted earlier on saying that when you go to court, you must know that it is a failed mediation by the family.
You know, I always say that, and I always say, you know, the law may not help you at all times. That is a fact. However, you need to also think that if the law is not the way it is, your child would actually stand up and go and do that for themselves. So you are basically representing your child. So do not fail your child by promoting the stigma attached to going to have maintenance. And earlier on, I just made this example that I've seen many parents regretting not having, you know, obtained the court order earlier on, because now the other parent then happens to then pass away.
Yeah.
And you find that they had ultimately moved on during the course of their life. They had married someone, and that parent is new spouse is now disputing the existence of your child. But then if you have a court order, that court order does not expire unless it is set aside by another competent court of law. You can use that particular court order without even speaking to anyone by submitting it at the Master of the High Court or at the pension fund administrators. Then you get the future maintenance for your child without arguing with anyone. So let us rather make life easy for ourselves and for our children. And remember, children are minors. They are not able to stand up for themselves to go and represent themselves. So take that stand as a parent to do it for them.
Okay. Lebohang, let's try again.
Yes.
Yeah, it's much better.
Yes, I'm back. The thing is, I'm maintaining my child, ne? And then the previous amount that I was receiving was 4,000 rand. And then the lady took the child to a private school. And I don't know the agreement between the two parties that side. And then after failing, whatever they failed, he came back to me with a court order saying you must appear in maintenance court. You don't maintain the child. Then I went, I followed all the procedures, only to find out that she's paying 980 for school fees, which I don't know, and then 450 for transport.
Mm-hmm.
Then we didn't argue at court. I said, what is wrong? Then she explained whatever she explained, and then I said to court, okay, it's fine. You can took 1,500 rand on top of my payment of 4,000 rand. I'll survive. But now the problem is one. When I have to see the child, she's not staying with the child. She took the child to the granny, and then after the granny, she's staying there with the other party.
Mm.
So the problem is when I want to see the child, I'm off only on weekends. Right? And then my problem is when it's off on weekends, when I have to see the child, always they are telling me one thing. The mommy came on Friday night, she took the child.
That's okay, so why can't you go to where they're staying?
No, I can't, bro, because of we argued and we fought, there's a protection order, I can't enter the home there.
Okay. Lungisa, what recourse does somebody like Lebogang have?
Those are actually two separate issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that he can't, now they're not allowing him to see the child. The maintenance part is separate from that one. He can go back to court to indicate that he's paying the child and they're not allowing him to see the child. But he cannot say, I'm going to stop paying maintenance because mm-hmm. they're not allowing me to see the child.
Okay.
Those are completely two separate issues.
Okay. Lisedi, good morning. Hi, Lisedi.
Hi, Aldrin. So
Yebo.
I have a cousin of mine who went to study BCom accounting. His father didn't support him until grade 12. He qualified, got into a CA stream, BCom accounting program at Vet. Then, at that time, the mother said, now I can't afford you. At that time, I could. They took the proof of registration to the court, presented a proof of registration of over 25,000, and the dad just said, I can't afford it.
Mm.
And that was his excuse. He said, no, actually, they said commit some amount every some on a monthly basis. And he said, I can only afford 500. And the dad was doing well. He was working as one of the key managers in an asset management business.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all in good speaking terms. They are not fighting. And at that point, we got news that these fathers, they like talking at the beer places, but just go there and say, I afford 500 rand. So then he said it's not enough, and the court guys or officials said, just take that 500 rand because the trial is going to take longer. By that time, you will have already been a dropout because you won't have any money that is going to come through from him. We'll go through trial, check his income expenditure, mm-hmm. and the days will be prolonged.
Yeah.
So, and for him to even get him in that courtroom, he had to go through different police stations with a sapuna, someone saying, that's not my jurisdiction.
So is this the child doing it?
He's a chartered accountant today.
No. Was it the child who was taking the father to court?
Yes.
Okay.
He was taking the father to court. But I'm just trying to say that process of the magistrate at court telling people to just take what's on the table, not meeting their needs, but also telling them that if trial comes, it could even take 2 years.
I get
something out on that.
Okay. Josephine, your take on that?
Okay. Can I just add on the issue of Lebogang first before
okay.
I jump into this one. With regard to Lebogang, I've picked up a lot of challenges there. Number one is the fact that the maintenance is being received by a person who is not legally eligible to receive maintenance. The only person who can receive maintenance is the person that has care of the child. So in this case, the grandmother should be the one actually receiving the maintenance and not the mother, because the mother is not staying with the child. And what will happen is that the grandmother should have actually, you know, lost the case against both the parents, so that they go and do an assessment of the financial standing of both the parents.
Mm.
Number two, he also mentioned the issue that he's now being barred from seeing the child, especially now that there is a protection order issued against him. I would suggest that he actually approach one of the offices of the family advocate and request that they assist him with what we call a parenting plan, because we don't want the child, you know, losing that particular bonding with the father, you know,
yeah.
Because we need to look at the phase of development of the child, that, you know, the child still needs to be, you know, closer to the father and still needs to have contact with the child. And what the mom is doing, she's actually violating the rights of the child to have contact with the father there.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love for him to take this matter forward by getting help in terms of getting the parenting plan. They can also approach the private social workers, my sister who's also part of this conversation, that can help them with that particular parenting plan. And with regard to the issue of the courts, you know, forcing people to accept whatever is available. I want to highlight the fact that when you're going through a maintenance case, you are going to meet two different officials in the maintenance court. Firstly, you're meeting what we call the maintenance officer. The maintenance officer is the one that has what we call a pre-inquiry with the parents. And if the parents then agree whilst they're sitting with the maintenance officer, then they'll only see the magistrate when the magistrate is going to be endorsing the court order. But the maintenance officer must be there just to thresh out all the nitty-gritties of the needs of the children. However, a maintenance officer cannot force a parent to accept what is put on the table. Parents have the right to request that a matter be postponed for investigation, and that they can then tell the magistrate to actually issue a court order to that effect, to say this matter is being deferred or it is being postponed pending an investigation. That can also be done by a private social worker who can go and, you know, investigate the social circumstances of the child, because other parents can just come in and then plead poverty. But we know that in South Africa we have two forms of economic situations. We have the formal and the informal one.
Yeah.
A person could be running businesses elsewhere and not even register them in their own names. I've seen people registering businesses in the name of their brothers and sisters and parents trying to evade maintenance. Mm-hmm. But also please note that when you do that, when you try to evade maintenance like that, your child has a right to claim maintenance to their grandparents. So you may be refusing to assist your child, but your child can actually then, you know, go a step up by claiming maintenance against your own parents. So let us not do that. Let us come to the party, because you'll be causing your own family massive problems.
Okay. Because we're running out of time as well and the number of calls, I'm going to ask you to please be brief, short and sharp, straight to the point. We'll also take some of your tweets at Aldrin St. Pierre at Power FM 987 as well. Tabiso, let's start with you. Good morning.
Hi, Aldrin.
Good, Tabiso.
I'm all right, man. Just a quick one. I don't know if I'm veering off the topic, but I just want to understand, because I want to be quick. Is there a law in South Africa that says that when the separation happens, by default, the mother takes the child? Because I feel that I was a better parent to our child. Suddenly, I'm a bad parent. I just want to understand.
So is this in the absence of going through the courts?
Yeah. Like when we separate, immediately the woman goes her way before we even get to court. But they normally take the child.
Okay.
You know, just want to know if there's a rule these days when the separation happens, the woman takes the child.
Okay. Paul, good morning.
Morning, Eldrian. How are you?
Good, Paul.
Good, Eldrian team. And mine is a bit long, but you know, because we don't have the time. I was married and divorced with 2 kids.
Mm-hmm.
And at the court, like, you know, at the settlement, like, they give us the option, like, we have 50-50 parenting, like, our and the responsibility. We agreed to all that. And after that, everything just went, like, south. I can't see my kids. I don't have access to my kids. I can't speak with my kids. I don't, like, I know nothing about my kids. And
and you still pay maintenance?
I'm still paying maintenance. You know, Adrian, it's like, I don't even know if my kids are alive. I know nothing about my kids, and I pay maintenance. And, like, I feel like the law is feeding us, man. Like it is terrible. Like, I was sick because of depression. I was... Like having all these kind of sicknesses because I can't see my kids, you know, and I knew nothing about my kids. The only time when she phones me is when she needs something from me or she needs more money or something. But like, I don't know what to do.
So sorry, Paul, for your experience. So you haven't even seen pictures of the children.
I can't even see the pictures.
When last have you seen the children?
That was last year before. before we go to court for a divorce. That was the last time I saw my kids. And like now, you must understand that I stayed with my kids before. It is so terrible like that. Like I just miss just to speak, just to hear the voice. But I can't even hear the voice.
Okay, Paul, I'm going to ask you to just hold on. I'm going to ask Lungisa. Lungisa?
Yes, Arian.
Your response to somebody like Paul, what recourse do they have?
First of all, Paul, I'm sorry to hear what you're going through. It shouldn't be that way. As you've explained earlier on, that the most important thing when parents go separate ways is the best interest of the child. And in this case, the mother has violated all the rights of the children in terms of allowing them to see you as their father. And even more so, you were with these children, you raised them, and now she doesn't want you to see the children. But having said that, you either have to go back to an order was made at court when you guys divorced. I would think that there was an order, and that order would indicate in terms of when do the children come to you, probably during holidays, or you see them over the weekend, or when do you see them. So that would be the first point of call, in terms of you go back and you indicate that this is not happening. This is now. I haven't seen my children now for almost a year. Yet the order that was issued after the divorce was saying the children should be with me during holidays or over the weekend.
Yeah,
and then you take it from there.
Okay.
And what is happening right now? It's unfortunate. And I mean, I can't imagine what must be happening with the children, because remember, as well, they were so used to having their father, and psychologically they're going to be affected.
Yeah.
And maybe they're not doing well at school because they can't cope.
Yeah.
They don't understand what is going on. I mean, the father is not there anymore.
Yeah. Josephine, from your end? Hi, Josephine, are you still there?
Yes, if I am, yes. Can I offer, extend my hand to Boot Paul? Can he send me his number
that.
On my 0763019811 WhatsApp? I will take up his case and then ensure that he does see the children.
Appreciate that, Paul.
Yes,
Nathan.
Adrian, it's so painful. You know, I think like we men in South Africa, we are going terrible experiences whereby it seems like, you know, we're helpless, you know. It's unfortunate.
So sorry, man. So sorry for that experience. And Josephine will be able to assist you. Victor, we'll put you back to the producers. And hopefully Josephine or Lungisa will be able to help you off air.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.